Christine, are you there? Larsine?
Can you hear me now? Good.
Yes, I can hear you now.
Good morning.
I
Good
can feel
morning,
you.
everybody. My name is Larsine. I'm a very, very grateful member of Al-Anon. I want to thank you guys for joining me today, and I want to say special thanks to Yvonne for all the work that she's doing, on behalf of all of us, so that we have this kind of forum that we can come together. I know for me, it's been very, very comforting, to have these Zoom meetings, and because Al-Anon is such an important part of my life, and it helps me stay focused on where I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to be doing, and most importantly, that I am not alone doing it. And so I want to thank Yvonne, for that, and to the tapers, Debbie and David, for his help. This is a time to really appreciate each other. Everybody's doing the best that they can, and I have nothing but admiration for people who even step beyond that box. So I want to thank them. I also want to thank Angie and Chip and Rick and Juanita. They did the other three previous workshops. When Yvonne asked me to do this, boy, I wanted the last one, and not because I want to be last, because I want to see how they do it, because I don't want to screw it up or whatever. And so I really appreciate those guys paving the way. That's how Al-Anon works. I think that's how we learn, is we watch the people that go ahead of us and pave the way. I do want to start out and let you know I am by no means an authority. I don't speak for Al-Anon. What I'm going to just share is my own experience, strength, and hope. That's all I have to share. When I came to Al-Anon before, I had a lot more to share, but I've now been, my sponsor makes sure that I just share what I know and nothing else. So I am grateful for that today. She always tells me when I do stuff like that, she says, be a good example. And if you can't be a good example, then be a very loud warning. So I'm going to do my best to be a good example and not a loud warning. But any day I am capable of being a very loud warning, because it is a one day at a time thing. I asked, Yvonne, when she was picking my brain for what it would be or whatever, I have always really liked this book. It came out, I think, like in 2008, something like that. And I think we have some of the best literature. I mean, you really delve into some of this stuff. I mean, when I do the readings, they really resonate with me. And so, and I love Discovering Choices. The title even really caught my eye. Just because about choices. And it's amazing to me. I think, a little backstory for me, I had an alcoholic dad, grew up in an alcoholic home. I married an alcoholic. I have a child that's an alcoholic. I have a sister that's an alcoholic. And I don't think it matters how many alcoholics you have. I used to think you should get credit, because that way your suffering is much more justified because you have so many. But it's my experience that I really only do focus on one at a time, and I think you just need one alcoholic. If you have a good one, you're good to go here. You don't have to. All that extra stuff is really not necessary. So, but one of the things I've always felt, or I felt before I got here, is I just didn't really think I had choices. It's just like, and as a little kid, when you grow up in alcoholism. I mean, what are your choices? Your dad's a drunk and this is what he does. And so you don't feel like you have any choices. And I think that that's, the big, big lie from the family disease of alcoholism, is that you don't have any choices. And what I have learned in Al-Anon is there are always choices. Now, they're not always fun choices, and that's the deal. I heard someone share at a meeting one time that her sponsor told her that, not all choices are feel good choices, because sometimes, and I know that from my own experience, when I've made a choice, other people weren't happy with that choice. And it didn't give me pleasure to make them not happy with my choice. But I got to learn here that I have to make the choices that I need to make for me in order to have, a happy life, and what I need to do, whether or not, you're in agreement with that or not, and I get to pray about that. I get to discuss that with the sponsor. I get to discuss that with other people, in the program that I trust. And I get to make an informed decision today. And the other thing I learned about choices is you can make a choice and then somewhere down the road find out, nope, that wasn't the way to go. And guess what? You can change your mind. I didn't know that that was possible either, because all my thing was, once I made up my mind, boy, that's the path we're going down. And if people die, so be it. Because again, where does all that thinking come from? And so I want to start, I'm going to try and break this, you know, into like four segments. There's actually 16 chapters in the book, but I'm only going to look at the first 12 very briefly. I'm going to read, each chapter is just about a page and a half, and it's well worth the read. I know people don't necessarily like to be read from, but for those of you that don't have the book, I want you, again, the literature is so good and speaks for itself. And again, where I get my inspiration, you know, from the choices, you know, from reading from this book. So the first chapter is we start from where we are, which to me is an amazing concept, to start from where we are. You know, I always want to start either way ahead or I'm so far behind, I'll never catch up. So it says, we come to Al-Anon because of the problems caused by someone's drinking. Some of us are primarily concerned about a relationship with a spouse or partner who has a drinking problem, while others have alcoholic parents or children. Sometimes an alcoholic situation in the workplace brings us to Al-Anon. Regardless of the particular relationship, there is one common denominator, the effect of someone else's drinking on us. Al-Anon gives us an opportunity to look at ourselves and understand how alcoholism has distorted our perspective, hurt our self-image, and affected our ability to develop and maintain healthy relationships. It isn't unusual to enter the doors of an Al-Anon family group in a state of distress. Despite the confusion and chaos we may be experiencing, the program offers us hope that by improving our attitudes, we can live better, happier lives. In Al-Anon meetings, we meet people who have had experiences similar to ours. They share how much their lives have improved. They show us that our past failures don't have to limit our future growth as long as we are willing to learn new approaches. An Al-Anon family group also offers opportunities to understand our own feelings better and how to reach out to other people for support. Before we began attending Al-Anon meetings, many of us ignored our feelings and felt isolated by our problems. We focused primarily on trying to fix the alcoholic relationship or coping with the crisis of the day. We tried to keep things as normal as possible by taking on responsibilities that the alcoholic neglected. It was all up to us, or so we believed. We felt we had to keep up the appearance that everything was okay, even if that meant making excuses or lying for the alcoholic. Under these circumstances, it can be painful or confusing to pay attention to our own feelings. When we hear other people share in the meetings, however, we begin to recognize how much we have in common with them. As we relate, we begin to feel connected, sometimes for the first time in our lives. Trust begins to grow. An Al-Anon meeting is a safe place to share our feelings. We learn that we're not the only ones whose point of view has been twisted by the strain of living with the effects of someone else's drinking. As we listen to other people's stories, we discover things about ourselves that we may never have suspected. We can begin to admit to ourselves how we feel and come to understand ourselves better. With the love and support we find in Al-Anon meetings, we're able to recognize and accept who we are. And then this is like my favorite part. Wherever we may be in our search for a healthy relationships, we have to begin where we are today. It may be painful to think how much better our relationships could have or should have been. There's no point in criticizing ourselves when we did the best we could with what we had. We can gain peace of mind by putting aside what we could or should have done and by accepting who and where we are right now. The Al-Anon program offers a range of tools that can help us as we continue to attend meetings. We learn that it is possible to let go of old companions like failure, shame, and guilt. In time, we can make progress, but we can only make it one day at a time. The Al-Anon tools help us realize that the ability to start over is always within our reach, and there's always more hope than we may have thought. And when I think about, you know, starting from where I am, growing up in an alcoholic home, I don't know that I ever really knew where I was. There's always all that insecurity that's always kind of going on. Every day is a crisis. You never know what's going to happen. And so you're just always waiting for something terrible to happen. And some days that happened and some days it didn't happen. But I spent the whole day waiting for it to happen. So it was regardless if it happened or it didn't. You know, what I've got to learn about myself, you know, and where I am in every given day is I'm a reactor. Yvonne and I were talking about that earlier. That's just who I am. It's taken a long time to try to learn to respond, but I am a reactor. You know, I'll give you an example. We were camping one time, and I was with our kids were little, and We were in Zion National Park, and it was summer, and there was gobs of bugs everywhere. And I can tolerate a lot of things, but bugs freaked me out. I just am not a bug person. And so I was having this traumatic day. Everywhere we go, some creepy thing would fall on me or whatever. It was awful. And now we're at the end of the day. We're roasting the marshmallows by the campfire. And I feel something cold slide down my neck into my shirt. And I start jumping up and down screaming, "It's in my bra, it's in my bra," you know. And my husband's digging in there trying to get it out. And it turns out the back of my earring had come undone. And it slid down my bra. And, you know, but, you know, while all this is going on, of course, I've attracted all the other campers and all that other type of stuff that's going on. But again, what I've learned about myself is that's who I am. I'm a reactor to situations. You know, it's just, I still do that today. But now I have these tools, you know, that have been provided to me. Again, going to meetings and as the book talks about, learning from you guys, you know, it's, I used to think when I came to Al-Anon, that Al-Anon wanted me to be somebody totally different, you know, and there is some truth to that. But the reality is that Al-Anon wants you to be who you were supposed to be in the first place, you know. And if you're a reactor, or you're a super neat person, or you're a super disorganized person, it's all irrelevant. If that's who you are and that's who you're comfortable with, and that's okay. And there's an acceptance of this is what I do. And when I accept that this is what I do, guess what? I don't beat myself up over it anymore. It's not necessary. This is how I do it. It may not be the way that you do it, but this is the way that's comfortable for me. And when I think about where we start from where we are, that's exactly where I want to start from. Who is Larsine? Why does she do what she does? And is that okay? And I'm pretty much a neatnik most of the time. I like things where they go, just because it's very comfortable for me. I know people have told me, and you know, oh, that has to do with growing up in an alcoholic home and how you're trying to control and do whatever. And that may all be true, but it's irrelevant. I still like things where they go. It's comfortable for me. I don't want to spend time searching for things. And that's who I am. And I like that about myself today. And I like that about myself, again, through going through the inventory process and accepting me for who I am. I heard a guy share one time, and he got up, and I guess he was normally a complainer at the meeting. So he says, now whenever I share, my sponsor wants me to start with, I'm better than I think I am. And again, I don't know that on my own, but a sponsor can see that, because I will take everything and I will make it be a negative. That can't be good, this blah, blah, blah. Or I go the complete opposite, you know, everything I do is absolutely right and what you do is wrong. And to me, what Al-Anon is about, what it continues to be about, is finding that balance, accepting myself for who I am. And being okay with that, you know, and there is just so much comfort in that. And then guess what comes next after that? Once I accept myself, it's so much easier to accept you for who you are and how you like to do things. And it opens my mind to hear how you like to do things, because sometimes you guys will say something that I can now incorporate into my life, or at least be willing to give it a try, so that I too can, you know, it's about living and growing and doing things, you know, whatever makes you comfortable, you know. And that's what I love about going to meetings. That's still kind of, you know, the Zoom isn't quite the same feeling, you know, that I get from that. But I know when I walk into a meeting and I sit in a chair, especially at my home group, I mean, when we, you know, we talk about, you know, welcome home, being home, you know, it really is. It's such a comfortable spot for me to be. And it's a comfortable spot for me to be, because even though I accept myself for who I am, some days I'm not a nice person. I don't know why that happens sometimes, and I get really super sensitive about what everybody's doing or saying, and I find myself in a bad spot. But again, that's just where I am, and I can come to that meeting and respond to fix me, you know, or do any of that kind of stuff. They just, okay, you're in a bad spot, so please don't share. You know, they don't really tell me that, but that's what they should tell me. And so again, the starting from where we are, you know, to me is the most important part. It's so much honesty that's in there. You know, when I don't know what to do, knowing that I don't know what to do is a good place to start from, instead of acting like, well, I've been coming for so long, I should know exactly what I'm doing here, or beat myself up because I've done something wrong. You know, I have tools. I have a sponsor I can call. I can turn myself in. You know, this is what happened. What do you think? You know, and again, and I get that feedback. And it's all about being comfortable with who I am. And Al-Anon allows me to do that. You know, because for me, before Al-Anon, it was either I was just the greatest thing and I knew everything there was to know and what everybody else should do. Or the other hand, I'm a terrible wife, I'm a terrible mother, I'm a terrible daughter. And when you're doing that seesaw back and forth, and it's not just day to day, it might be 6 or 7 times a day. You know, there's no happiness in your life. There's just nothing but judgment and crap and corruption that's always pouring down upon me. So I am grateful that that doesn't happen. Chapter 2, and I'm not going to read everything that's in here about, you know, the whole things, but chapter 2 in the book is a solid foundation. And I'm just going to read a couple of things in here of the paragraphs I want to. At some point, we find someone else's behavior greatly disturbing to our peace of mind. We want to help them because we believe that it is the best way to help ourselves. It never even occurred to me that that's really what I was doing. We think if only they would stop drinking, everything would be well again. Our effort and energy have shifted almost exclusively to what we can't control, someone else's drinking. As a result, we lose touch with what we can control, ourselves and our attitudes. With the focus off ourselves, we lose a balanced perspective on life without realizing quite how it happened. Trying to fix someone else's problems is like stepping uninvitedly into someone else's shoes. The shoes don't fit, they pinch, or they're too loose. As difficult as it is to walk in them, we remain determined to make it work. We don't realize that we have choices. It doesn't occur to us to take the shoes off and look for a pair made specifically for us. For those of us with relationships affected by alcoholism, nothing fits quite right from day to day. We know confusion, pain, and despair. Days are often spent reviewing the past where nothing can be changed or rehearsing a future that hasn't yet happened. Meanwhile, we completely miss the present moment. As the effects of the illness progress, we become increasingly out of touch with ourselves and isolated from others. At meetings, we find people who have discovered that happiness is a choice they can make at any moment. Contentment is no longer seen as an accidental mood created when someone else does what we want. We see people who are able to find peace and serenity even when the outward circumstances of their lives are chaotic. We're able to listen to them share, and we find that their experience of living with an alcoholic has much in common with ours. As we hear about the relationships in their lives, healthy or unhealthy, we come to understand that everyone in Al-Anon is on a similar path. Peace of mind and healthy relationships are possible for us all. And when I think about a solid foundation in Al-Anon, you know, I definitely have to look to sponsorship for that. When I think about a solid foundation in Al-Anon, you know, it's about the steps, and it's about having someone show you what that's supposed to look like. Because I don't know about you, but I can come into a meeting and I can hear what you're saying, and I am very, very good at faking it. You know, I'll act as if I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think it's very easy to come to Al-Anon, and I think it's very easy to figure out what it is, what you're supposed to say and how you're supposed to say it. You know, but whether you're really being able to implement that in your life, because again, I have no idea. And when I think about, you know, and I always think about working the steps, you know, it's just like the first time I saw the steps on the wall, you know, and I mean, I'm not an alcoholic, and I mean, I'm like, you're powerless over. I mean, I'm just like, there's so much of this does not apply to me. You know, there is just no way. It's all because, again, when my focus has always been on the alcoholics, you know, and when you're comparing yourself to an alcoholic, it is easy to look good. Okay, let's be honest. You know, it's not like you're really setting the bar high here. You know, it's really easy to look good next to what they're doing. But I always think about Karen A, you know, when she talks about working the steps in Al-Anon, she said, Karen A from Laguna Beach, she always says that, you know, if you think working the steps are hard, try working them when you're perfect. And that, boy, I understood that right away, which is what makes it look so difficult, I think, from the very beginning. So again, you know, sponsorship for me is that person that set that solid foundation. You know, this is what we do and this is how we do it. And I think about, you know, also doing the steps, you know, like why we do them. You know, why do you listen to a sponsor? Why, you know, do you even attempt to start doing such a thing? And I remember reading in, again, one of our books, when they talk about working the steps, it's obedience to the unenforceable. And I absolutely love that definition. You know, because why do we do? Because inside, even though we may be looking at another person, I think internally we know that there's something we need to do for us. Because why else would you be here? You know, I think a lot of us think we're coming in to fix someone else. But I think once you come here and you start getting the drift about what's going on here, and these are the steps that we take, again, that solid foundation that a sponsor will give you. You know, this is what you do for you, not what you do for someone else. And yet you, and again, okay, so now you've told me, you know, that I heard a lady, I just fell over in my chair. She said, she'd been coming to Al-Anon a little bit. She sits at the table and she goes, so let me get this straight. So you come to Al-Anon, and then all they tell you in Al-Anon is you just let the alcoholic do whatever it is they're going to do, and you don't do nothing. That's how it works, you know, and kind of, you know, I mean, it's like, well, it sounds kind of stupid when you say it that way, but in reality, yeah, but the thing is no, it's, but then you work on you. You work on you, something you can do something about. And I remember the very first time I really used my sponsor, Jeannie, as a sponsor. Now, when I picked Jeannie, I picked her for all the complete wrong reasons. You know, I didn't, you know, it wasn't necessarily what she had or anything else like that. I picked Jeannie because Jeannie was older than me. I picked Jeannie because she wasn't married to an alcoholic. She was divorced from her alcoholic. You know, Jeannie was from Holland. She had a thick Dutch accent. She could hardly understand a bloody word she said until you asked her to be your sponsor. And then you understood every word she said, because that's the magic of Al-Anon, I swear. And I remember the first time that I actually, you know, and again, I got a sponsor because they said I had to get a sponsor. You know, I'm just like acting as if, doing what they say just so I look good. Not that I think anything is going to change in my life as a result of it. And I remember the first time that I used Jeannie as a sponsor, and my husband had a dead battery that morning, and he asked me to jump it. You know, so I was down with my car next to his truck. I jumped his battery. And right after I jumped his battery, he ran out of gas. And this made him really angry. And he started yelling and screaming and carrying on and doing whatever. And again, I don't take crap off of no one. He started yelling and screaming. So I started yelling and screaming right back at him. And he went, stormed off to work. And I went upstairs and I called my sponsor and I reported his behavior. And because that's what I do. And I remember telling Jeannie, this is what he did. He started yelling, screaming, blah, 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 he. And when I got done telling Jeannie the story, she says, when Butch gets home tonight, I want you to go up to him and apologize for your behavior. It was unnecessary and it was unkind. And I was like, whoa, 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 Jeannie doesn't know how we do things in America, which I always think is really important. And she missed the who started it. So I started telling her the story a second time because obviously she did not hear these crucial details. And again, how my mind works by myself, because I've grown up all my life, it's somebody's fault. Somebody point the finger. It's not about the solution. It's about whose fault it is. And I started telling her the story the second time, because obviously she missed crucial details. And I get through the second telling. I didn't even get through the second telling. And she stopped me dead. And she says, don't tell me what you already told me. I heard you the first time. And another thing, don't ever call me and start a conversation with what Butch said or Butch did. I am not Butch's sponsor. I am Larsine's sponsor. And for what you said and did, it was unkind and unnecessary. You owe your husband an amends. I'll see you tonight at the meeting. Good night. Click. End of conversation. You know, again, I learned valuable lessons. You know, never call your sponsor first thing in the morning because you got all day long to think about what she told you to do. You know, and never call your sponsor when you're going to see her that night at a meeting because she's going to want to know if you followed directions. You know, and I'm a rule follower. I got to do the deal. And I don't put stuff off. I have never been a putter offer. You know, when Butch walked in that night at 5 o'clock, I marched right up to him and I told him I was sorry that I let his shitty attitude affect me the way that it did, you know, and that I would try and do better in the future. Now, I know that that is not maybe the best amends you've ever heard, but I'm here to tell you, I believe it's the best amends I've ever made because it was the first time I was willing to take direction from somebody who I knew what was better for me than I knew what was better for me. It's the very first time. It's just whatever. I'd never said I was sorry for nothing. You know, again, that's what I learned in alcoholism. If you admit you're sorry, then that means you're at fault. Oh, that can't happen. You know, and again, the lie, the family disease, the lie of alcoholism, it doesn't let me be who I am. And that's a person who can admit their mistakes when they make them. You know, now I've since gotten much, much better at making amends, absolutely. But that was, but again, it's about that very first time, that very first time that you start making some different choices in your life. I can listen to my sponsor and see what she says. And when she said it, it was unkind. It was unnecessary. We already had a bad situation and all I did was make it worse. You know, and from there, and those are the stepping stones and those are the solid foundation. And it's not like I made amends to my husband and then our life turned into wonderfulness, you know, and we were apologizing back and forth, left and right. You know, it was practice. You want to know what Al-Anon's about? It's about practice over and over and over again until it's so foreign for me to make amends that today it's comfortable for me to make amends. I'm not afraid of them anymore. I don't sit there and think, well, what are they going to say? It's not about what they're going to think. It's about what I think about myself at the end of the day. That's what I want to have happen. And so this obedience, you know, to the unenforceable, you know, it's for my benefit. And I know it because I feel it. I don't know how else to describe it to you. And if, you know, and to those of you, you know, that are participating, you know, when you actually do the right thing, we talk about doing the right thing here, the next right indicated thing. And why do we do it? What's the reward? I don't know about you, but I just, there's just a feeling in me that lets me like myself a little bit better for who I am. You know, and that's just, to me, that's the priceless stuff, you know, the priceless gift of serenity that we talk about. Is just peace with myself. I made a mistake. I took care of it to the best of my ability. And it is no longer necessary for me to beat myself about it over and over and over again. And thus we get this opportunity and this chance to move on. Chapter 3 is a more positive perspective. And okay, life with an alcoholic is often centered on the drama that accompanies the illness, infidelity, bankruptcy, violence, homelessness, and abuse. Emotional, physical, and sexual are all possible companions for those of us who live or have lived with an alcoholic. We can become so distracted that our worries crowd out all notions of a sane relationship with ourselves or others. If we're afraid of being alone, we might keep holding on to a relationship that has been important to us for many years, even if it is harmful to us now. While denial often serves the purpose of helping us to cope with the effects of alcoholism, it blinds us to the true nature of our approach to relationships. Without the use of the 12 steps and the support of other Al-Anon members, many of us feel lost and distracted. We may have come to Al-Anon not knowing that alcoholism is an illness, or what part our behavior has played in making the alcoholic situation worse. Our vision of life can become very narrow. Much like the alcoholic, we don't realize how much alcoholism has changed us, and we don't understand how much we need to recover. As we attend meetings, we begin to discover or regain our sense of balance. As we listen to other members share their stories, we learn that we always have choices. Gradually, we start to see how we can choose different attitudes and behaviors, and consequently, we can enjoy different outcomes. We embark on an exciting voyage of self-discovery as we learn who we are and who we can become. So when I think about, you know, this more positive perspective, I think about my dad. My dad was the alcoholic growing up and just not a very nice person. And my dad, when he was drinking, was a mean drunk. He's just a mean, violent drunk and very verbally abusive. And I had, needless to say, I had a boatload of issues when I got to Al-Anon about my dad. My dad died when he was 55 years old. He died the death that they talk about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Total Insanity and Death. And that's exactly what happened to my dad. I mean, my dad was literally tied up. I can't even tell you the last words my dad said to me. You know, they were that vile and that vulgar. I always say the last words my dad said to me, when in reality, what I know today is those are the last words my dad's alcoholism said to me. Because now when I, you know, again, now that I can look back on that with different perspective and a different attitude, what I remember today, the day my dad died, what I remember the day was I just saw this awful guy that I grew to hate. You know, and I could have cared less. I was glad he was dead. My sisters and I were like, ding dong, the witch is dead. And I don't tell you the story because I'm proud of it. I tell you the story because this is where we were when that happened. And again, doing inventory work, working with a sponsor, having that solid foundation. You know, now I can look back on that and I think back on that day and I think back on that day. And now I can see my dad as a person. you know, who was chewed up by the disease of alcoholism. My dad was over 6 foot tall, you know, and he was a big guy, but laying in that bed, if he was 140 pounds, the eyes sunk back in his head, you know, and just before alcoholism took his life, you know, it spit out the last crap words it could to try and hurt the family, because that's what the family disease of alcoholism does. And so now that's why I say, you know, those weren't the last words my dad said to me. Those were the last words my dad's alcoholism said to me. And I expected nothing less. And anyway, I had a lot of issues with that. And I've worked through a lot of stuff. And my sponsor, you know, helped me deal with that. And I remember, you know, I was coming to Al-Anon for a while, and I was still very angry about my dad. And even though I was coming to Al-Anon and I was doing the step work and I'd written about my dad, done inventory about my dad, things would happen. People would say things to me, talk to me in such a way. And boy, it would just bring back those memories. You know, my dad was really big on humiliation, embarrassment. I always tell alcoholics, you know, if you've ever had a drunken father show up at a school function, then you know that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization isn't just reserved for the alcoholic. But somebody would say something to me, talk to me in a certain way, and it would trigger something in me. You know, I'd feel the hair on the back of my neck go back up, and I would become so angry all over again. And I don't know about you, but when I am really pissed off and angry, I like to take that home and share it with my husband and my children and the people I love and care about the most, because isn't that the family disease of alcoholism? But I didn't want to be doing that. Because I'm coming to the meetings, I'm learning the stuff. I want a more positive perspective on all of this, but I don't know how to do it because I'm still so hurt. I am still so hurt. And so I remember going to my sponsor. And again, my sponsor was always huge. You know, Larsine, it's not about the problem. It's about the solution. You got your finger on the problem. There is no question about that. But when that's all you're looking at, you're not going to get a new perspective. How can I look at this from a different angle? And so she gave me an assignment, you know, and she wanted me to go home and think about a good thing my dad had done for me. And my initial reaction is there is absolutely no such thing. But one thing I learned right out of the gate from Al-Anon that I believe was God's grace for me. And that was, I heard at a meeting that you have to be willing. If you're not willing to do anything different, how can you possibly expect anything to be different? So whatever reason I heard that, it made sense to me, and I believe it, and I continue to believe it to this day. So I've always been willing. And so I was willing, and I went home, and I don't know how long it took me, a couple of weeks, and I remembered that my dad taught me how to drive. You know, and if you're going to drive and live in Southern California and, you know, and marry an alcoholic of your own, it's just a skill you got to have if you're going to track that sucker down. And so I was grateful that my dad taught me how to drive. And this is back, like, you know, in the 70s when I'm doing this stuff, or, you know, and you needed to drive. You know, there weren't cell phones. There wasn't GPS devices. You wanted to track an alcoholic down. You had to track an alcoholic down, you know, just using nothing but your own brains. And apparently there's a lot of us that are very good at it. But I remember thinking my sponsor wouldn't be happy with this answer, but it's the only thing I could, think of, you know, because my very first remembrance on this planet is fear at my father's hands. And I'm supposed to think of a good thing he's done for me, you know, but again, he taught me how to drive. So I went to my sponsor with that answer. And you would have think I'd come up with a cure for cancer. You know, I mean, that's just how, you know, and I hope everybody in this, you know, in this Zoom platform, everybody in Al-Anon period is sponsored as well as I have been sponsored. I am so, so grateful, you know, for the sponsors I have had in my life. They have been just the most remarkable people who have gone out of their way to be kind to me and show me, you know, even when I was not grateful, even when I was not doing what they wanted me to do, when I questioned everything they told me how to do. I am so grateful for that. You know, but I go to Jeannie and I said, he taught me how to drive. And she's like, wonderful. She goes, now all I want you to do is whenever you think about the crap that happened when you were a kid, or how your dad hurt you, or how he made you feel bad about being a girl, or whatever the heck it is, just replace it with this positive one that he taught you how to drive, you know. Because she said, you know what, I want you to think about your dad, you know, and him dying with all of his children, being grateful that he was dead. And you're a parent and you have children. Is that what you would want to have happen to you? And can you really believe that that's what your dad wanted to have happen to him? You know, and when I think about it, no, I can't believe that that's what my dad wanted to have happen to him. Can I accept the fact that he was a sick alcoholic and he paid the ultimate price with his life and his children being glad he was dead? Do I need to punish anybody more than that? And again, it's just this perspective. You know, it's all about attitude here. I don't care what the deal is going on. It is all about attitude. And just to fast forward on that, go forward another 5 or 10 years and I got, you know, I'm in Al-Anon a while and I got curious about my name. My name is Larsine. My dad named me Larsine. He was very unhappy that I was not a boy child, but I was firstborn. And so he named me Larsine because he wanted to name me after him. But how he would always tell me the story is, well, when you were born, I was so happy to have my firstborn child, but then you were a girl and not a boy. And I was so disappointed because I really wanted to name you, you know, after me. But because you're firstborn, I gave you the name Larsine, which is the name of a town in Scotland, of which you should be extremely proud, you know, because, you know, my dad was so proud of his Scottish heritage. I've been told to always be really proud of that. And I've always been really proud of that. Fast forward, my dad's dead. I've done the big giant exercise forgiveness thing. I got curious about Larsine, Scotland. I go to the library, look up Larsine, Scotland, can find nothing. So I go to the reference librarian. I ask her to go look it up for me, you know, because, you know, well, you know, it's the name of a town in Scotland. That's all I know. She says, come back in 2 weeks. We'll see if we can find anything out. I come back 2 weeks later. No such place as Larsine, Scotland. Okay. So now I'm pissed. You know, I've been through, again, one more time. I do what Al-Anon tells me to do. You forgive my dad. But no, you know, I mean, here's this stuff. And again, it's not about it gets fixed and then that's it. You know, it's my perspective. You know, it's up to me to maintain that level of perspective. But boy, at the first sign of trouble, boy, I'm really Al-Anon's a lie. It's not true. Blah, 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 blah. Because my case is different, you know, and I'm so angry. And then I know this guy and he goes to Scotland every year to golf and he knows I'm crazy about my name. So he's like, well, you know, Scotland's a really old country. Maybe there was Larsine Scotland like thousands of years ago. Let me check with the people in Scotland before you go wackadoodle. So he goes to Scotland. He comes back 2 weeks later and no one in Scotland has ever heard of Larsine Scotland. Okay, so now I'm going to change my name, Bite Me Dad, because I am pissed. And no one can talk me off of this. I am just like, you know, yelling at my sponsor, you know, and here's my dad stabbing me from the grave. You know, we got to get all this forgiveness, let him off the hook. And what do I get for it? Your name means nothing. And so, and again, this is the high drama that I bring, you know, just the crap. And then it turns out I'm at a big AA speaker meeting one night and this AA guy walks up to me. Because now Larsine, unhappy with her name, has spread throughout the community. And he comes up to me and he goes, Larsine, he goes, you're not going to believe this, but I found out that Larsine is a Scottish word. I'm like, oh my God, you're kidding me. He goes, it is Scottish for father was drunk when daughter was born, so daughter got a weird name. Now, I know that that's not really true, and I knew it wasn't true at the moment. But then what he went really quickly on to tell me is, you know what, Larsine, I am alcoholic like your dad is alcoholic. And I don't know if he was drunk that day, if he wrote it down wrong. I don't know what the heck happened. He goes, but I'm here to tell you that I believed your dad named you Larsine and that he believed it was the name of a town in Scotland. And just because it's not the way you want it to be or wrapped the way you think it should be, does it make it any less of a gift? And that's the deal about the perspective here. You know, and I just didn't take his word for it because I never do. I mean, I always got to look at it from every 5,000 angles. But I remember going home that night and thinking about it and honestly thinking about it. And there was no way, as mean as my dad could be or whatever, that I think that he would plot so far in advance to give me this fake name just so he could hurt me, you know, 35, 40 years down the road, whatever the time it was. I just don't. I believe my dad believed it was the name of the town of Scotland. You know, and attitude is absolutely everything here. Because left to my own devices, being an Al-Anon, angry, I will change my name just to get even with you and spite you. But I show it to you, and you show me a different perspective and a different way to look at it. It never, ever occurs to me to look at it from that perspective. Why are we so, it's so important to talk to people and reason things out with someone else. Because what happens to me in Al-Anon over and over again when I change that perspective is I get the shot at a good life. And that's what happens for me. And now I got Larsine. It's on my license plate. You know, it's, and so my husband got me license plate holders that say it's the name of a town in Scotland. And so far I've literally had two complete strangers come up to me and tell me they have been there. I mean, you know, you can't make this stuff up. It's just what goes on. But perspective is absolutely positively everything here. And having that positive perspective, because again, it's your choice. You can look at every problem, but then you can look at it from the other side. And there's good in everything, even in the really devastating things that go on. I had a sister that was killed in a drunk driving accident at 32 years old. This is my alcoholic sister, and she wasn't driving, but everybody in the car was drunk, and there was an accident. She was thrown from the car, and she was killed. And it was a horrible experience, absolutely positively. But one more time, when I look back to what the positive thing for me was I didn't go through that by myself. I was so loved and so supported through all of it. And again, no one trying to fix me or make a reason for it or anything else, but I was loved through that experience. And, you know, and again, when I look back on it, nothing's ever going to make that be okay for me. But the positive part of it was just that. My sister lived her life the way that she chose to live it. I was on really good terms with her as a result of this Al-Anon program and letting her be exactly who she was supposed to be. So there was no bad feelings between us. And as much as I miss her to this day, and I think about her every single solitary day, there's people in my life that come in through Al-Anon and through Alcoholics Anonymous that I know that remind me so much of my sister. You know, and that's what I look at. That's what I look at. Thank you, God, for putting this person in my life. And I've got a lot of women Al-Anon friends, you know, alcoholic friends and stuff like that, because my sister was alcoholic. God, I see them in her, you know, and stuff. And I, you know, but her choice was her choice. And I get to be okay with that, which now gives me the opportunity to have the shot at a good life. So with that, I'm going to stop at those three chapters. I'm going to pop up on the screen. I pick in the book, Discovering Choices, at the end of each chapter, there are several questions. I've just picked out three just for the sake of brevity, and I'm going to pop those on the screen, and then I think Yvonne is going to like let you guys have a few minutes to look at that and then make any comments that you want either with the questions, and then we will go from there. So I'm going to put the screen share up right now, and hopefully I can do this good. I practiced.
Thank you, Larsine. Larsine is going to put some questions up for you guys. If you want to do some quick writing about that,